Hey, you're listening to Two Booked Up, a podcast about business and personal development books and the conversations they ignite. I'm Shelley Tonkin-Smith.
And I'm Rowena Mabbott. Today on Two Booked Up, we're concluding our conversation sparked by Gretchen Rubin's book, The Four Tendencies, which we've been chatting about over the last three episodes. We've had great conversations about how knowing your tendency, whether you're an upholder, obliger, questioner, or rebel, can help you in both your personal and professional life.
Yes, and one of the main themes that's come through for us is the importance of knowing yourself. But sometimes getting to know yourself can be difficult, and I think especially for mums, getting to know yourself and what you like can be difficult. Now, the four tendencies helps us to understand how we respond to expectations and why we act or don't act, but that's just one aspect of our overall personality. So today, we're going to be extending the conversation a bit wider and talking about some of the other tools and methods we've used to get to know ourselves better.
Yes, absolutely. And in my coaching practice, I've seen how transformative it is when people grow in their self-knowledge. They're more productive, more confident, and happier in their careers and relationships. So we're going to be suggesting a bunch of different frameworks and tools that have worked for both or either of us, from learning whether you're an extrovert or an introvert, to journaling and self-reflection, and maybe a bit of astrology thrown in there too if you're that way inclined. We want you to walk away from this episode with at least a few ideas that you can use to get to know yourself better and get all the amazing benefits that come with that.
I'm excited to dive into some of the other tools and methods we've used to get to know ourselves better. So I think where we can start is with some of the tips that Gretchen Rubin has shared about getting to know yourself better. So in The Four Tendencies, she jokes that there are two different types of people in the world, those who break up the world into two different types of people and those who do not. So Gretchen is clearly the former because she's got an article on her blog, and I'll link to it in the show notes. But it's all about setting New Year's resolutions that are right for you. And she distinguishes between like categories like larks and owls and abstainers or moderators and finishers or openers. And there's a few kind of these either or categories that she gives there. And these are simple ways to help you identify your preferences, to know yourself. So, Ro, can you just explain, like, why do these things matter?
So let's start with lark versus owl, which refers to whether you're a morning person or an evening person and when your energy is at its best. Now, the reason this is valuable is because knowing this about yourself is important if you want to be as productive as possible. So, for example, if you have a big project and you're an owl, don't get up early to do it. You're much better to adjust your schedule and work late in the evening after everyone else has gone to bed.
Oh, yes. Like, I am definitely more of an owl than a lark, at least when I have the choice. I just adore the quiet of the night, and I feel like I get so much done. But now that I have kids, I can't do the late nights anymore because, like, I have an early morning by default. So typically, I do try to fit all my work into the daylight hours because I don't do well early mornings, definitely not. But knowing that I am a little bit more of an owl is that I'll book in what my husband and I call a late night work session. And like he'll tease me and say, "Are you so excited for your late night work session?" Because I really do love working at night so much. So I'll do that from time to time when I really need to do a sprint on some work. And then we plan for a later start to the next day and just like plan around it. But I know that's when I'm going to do my best work.
Yes. Whereas I tend to do my best work in the morning. I think I'm more of a lark, probably from 6 years of high school, having to be up in the dark. I've trained my body in that way. Now, you also wanted to pick up on something there. You've mentioned the word sprint, and that's one of the other groups Gretchen distinguishes, the sprinters and the marathon runners. So for some people, we're best when we tackle a project in one focused sprint. Others are better a little bit every day kind of marathon approach. We also talked about earlier, you mentioned abstainer or moderator. So it's really useful to know this because if you're an abstainer, you're best to avoid something altogether. Whereas if you're a moderator, you can just do a little bit and then stop. Now, I love the classic example of this is chocolate. So do you find you eat the whole slab? Then you might be best being an abstainer because the only way you can kind of stop yourself from eating the whole slab, assuming that that is a problem for you. But if you don't want to eat the whole slab, then you might be better off being an abstainer. On the other hand, if you can stop after one piece, you're more likely a moderator.
Yeah, I think for me, that's where eating my 90% dark chocolate helps. It's delicious, but you're never going to be able to eat a whole slab of that stuff. What other tools have you used, Ro, or that you use with your clients to help them get to know themselves better? I know that you and I have worked on my strengths, and it's almost strengths with a capital S. I think it's like a specific realm of strengths. When we've worked together, I found this so helpful and so valuable in getting to know myself. So can you tell the listeners a little bit more about character strengths and how the listeners can find out what their top strengths are?
Absolutely. You know, I love this stuff. So I think knowing and embracing our character strengths is actually key to living a happy and fulfilled life. So with my clients specifically, I recommend the VIA Strengths Survey, which you can find at viacharacter.org, which will also include a link in the show notes. Now, it's a free assessment. So as part of the assessment, you receive a free report which provides your character strengths in rank order. Now, the key message to remember is that they are strengths. They are all positive things. There are 24 of them, and they're also universal. That is, they apply across all cultures. So some examples of strengths include curiosity, perspective, love, humility, creativity, and so on.
And they are illuminating just to know, like for me, what my top strengths were. And I know it wasn't just for me. Once I'd done it, I was like, this is so exciting. And I got my husband to do the strength survey. And he's also worked with you to leverage his strengths. Both of us have leveraged our strengths in our businesses. And it's really made such a huge difference to how well we know ourselves and how we operate and work. And also how much enjoyment we get from what we do. Like one of my top strengths, I think it is my top strength, is curiosity. And so if I'm not enjoying what I'm doing, I need to inject a little bit more curiosity, a little bit more variety, all of these kinds of new things. But yet I also need to watch for overplaying my curiosity and getting into the weeds with over-researching and overdoing things. So yeah, I feel like knowing those strengths gives you that kind of compass to, instead of doubting or questioning what we're doing, we can acknowledge, okay, this is something that's aligned with our strengths. And then we can feel really good about it, about what we're doing.
Yep, absolutely. You've definitely captured one of the best benefits of knowing yourself and your strengths, which is that we stop doubting ourselves, and it can be also used as a form of guidance for ourselves, as you've just shared, Shelley. Beautiful examples.
Now, I just want to bring it back to the four tendencies here again, Ro, because as you harness people's character strengths, you can also harness the strengths of their tendency, particularly for you during coaching. So I'd love for you to tell us a little bit how the four tendencies framework has helped you as a coach and how it's helped your clients. Like, just can you draw back the curtain for us a little bit and tell us a bit about how four tendencies comes into your actual coaching practice?
For sure. So I think in an earlier episode, we talked about how knowing my tendency helped me as a coach. So that was very much a knowing myself better and knowing how I prefer to work. But it's also really helpful for my clients to know what their tendency is, for them to know themselves better, but also for me to know what their tendency is so I can support them to know themselves better. So I either get them to do the four tendencies quiz on Gretchen's site, or sometimes, if time is of the essence, I can just ask them one or two questions and I'll know what tendency they are. So recently I was working with a gorgeous lady who I suspected was an obliger. And I simply asked her a question from the book. So Gretchen includes these towards the back of the book where she asks, you know, do you agree? And then I simply said to this client, do you agree? Promises we make to others shouldn't be broken, but promises we make to ourselves can be broken. And her immediate response was absolutely. She immediately agreed. So straight away that confirmed that she was an obliger. but importantly, it accelerated her coaching. It opened a whole new conversation that we could have around her need for external accountability, and that coming to coaching was a great first step in doing that. But it also helped me know how I could support her. So I was able to put some expectations in place for her, set some small milestones for her to reach, set some daily actions for her to carry out that I followed up on, not in a micromanaging way, but in a kind of, hey, I'm relying on you, I'm looking forward to hearing about this kind of way. So in other words, we could put together a really customized support that would help her to achieve her goals. But then, Shelley, working with you, you and I both know that that kind of support would not have been helpful to you at all.
Yeah, I am going to get irritated if someone is giving me any kind of like a to-do list or sort of if I feel like anyone's kind of checking up on me. But you've been such a great coach for me, Ro, because you've tapped rather into my rebel tendency and you've tailored my coaching to my identity. And when we plan, we talk big vision, we talk impact that I want to have, and this overall feeling rather than like micro to-do lists, than these granular boxes I have to check. So I think you really helped me get clear on this destination, this vision, and then I can feel free to walk the journey on my own. You know, like I think that that's like the power of coaching. Sometimes I can feel like I'm walking this journey in my own way. So it's been an amazing way that you've tailored your coaching approach to my tendency.
Oh, thank you. And look, I think you're right, but that I've found that coaching people from all the tendencies, the commonality is we all want to nail our goals. Everybody wants to do well on that. But the process of how we get there will be different depending on the tendencies. So, for example, when I work with questioners, it's often about seeking data. So seeking evidence about what their strengths and talents are. So with my questioner clients, for example, I encourage them to go to their colleagues and maybe give them some questions to help them identify strengths as other people perceive them so that then they can have that data. Because that data is super powerful and supportive for questioners. But then this is also really helpful for me as a coach. And for my clients, they can take action that will be really supportive in changing their habits. And in changing their habits, they change their lives. So what about you, Shelley? As we talk about changing lives, I know that parenting and homeschooling has changed your life and given you a lot more insight into yourself. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, well, as a homeschooling parent, there's a lot of encouragement to become a student of your child. But this has kind of inspired me to like become a student of oneself, you know, become a student of yourself. And in homeschooling, what this means is to be very aware and alert, curious about what your child's interests are, basically what makes them tick. And it also involves asking a lot of open-ended questions to them, like giving them space to express themselves and suspending your own judgment and finding all of this out. And I feel like this is a really good approach for us as adults too, when we're dealing with self-knowledge. We can learn from our experiences and be curious about ourselves and ask questions, like continue being intentional about life and going, how did that holiday feel? How did that collaboration feel? How did that particular client work feel? Becoming intentional, reflective, becoming a student of yourself. What was coming up for me? What was I feeling?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just nodding along and then realizing, oh, that's right, we're doing an audio. I also love asking questions and using them as part of a guided journaling tool to know oneself better. So I think with tailored prompting questions, we can learn to uncover more about ourselves and our beliefs. Similarly, like you were mentioning, we can ask ourselves questions or we could have someone else ask them, which is kind of what coaching is all about. But by asking open-ended, curiosity-led questions, we can gauge more about ourselves and what makes us who we are. Sometimes it can be as simple as asking, what matters to me? What do I love? And then responding verbally or in written format.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I love these curiosity-led questions. I also love my journaling. I do bullet journaling. But then I also do love a lot of like free form, just write out. And I love a big A4 page that I can just sit and write out a lot of my thoughts. So bullet journaling, what I do, my focus with bullet journaling is every night to write down. I've actually changed it recently. Write down three things that I don't want to forget about that day. That's been super helpful for me to just get a better sense of who I am, what I value. You know, sometimes you can have these wonderful things that actually happen and you do forget them. So yeah, I've used that prompt to write down three things that I don't want to forget about the day. And it might even be something that's a little bit, you know, maybe negative even, you know, maybe a feeling that cropped up for me, but something that I want to note, you know, that I don't want to forget. But often it just brings up the positive things or like something that my kids said or that kind of thing that I don't want to forget. So that's what I do as my daily log every day to write down what do I not want to forget about this day. And then you can go into doing spreads with your learnings. I'd love to get a little bit more into that of like when I read a book to bullet journal about it and do a spread of what I'm learning from the book. But journaling, I know, is one of your favorite tools, Ro. I know you've got some journal prompts on your website.
Yeah, I absolutely do. Thanks for mentioning that, Shelley. I do have some journal prompts and they are free to download on my website. So if you guys want to grab them, listeners, you can just visit rowenamabbott.com. And the link will be in the show notes.
That sounds awesome. Thanks so much, Ro, for that. And yes, we definitely will have those links in the show notes. And I just want to circle back to another part of the question that you asked around homeschooling and parenting. Homeschooling and parenting, I have to say, have really helped me to know myself better. As I said at the top of the show, I think sometimes for moms, it's difficult to find yourself and find what you love again. But I have found, I have also learned a lot about myself as I've homeschooled my boys. So be open to that. Be open to, as you parent, what are you learning about yourself as well as your kids? Like, I've learned about my preferred way of working. I've learned about what I love. As I've homeschooled them, I've sometimes gone, all right, I want to do these lap books or these like all this very creative kind of cut and pasty, sticky kind of projecty kind of things. And they don't want to do that. But I want to do it. So we do it because I love it. So it's really been a beautiful avenue for me to discover also what I love, what I enjoy. And I can bring them in like with the music stuff as well. Like, I love music and I've had to like bring them in. So it's given me this opportunity to learn more about what I love and then bring them in along for the journey, but also then discover what they love. And really, when my husband and I made the decision to homeschool, we had a lot of conversations and we asked a lot of questions. And just that process and the whole process over the last 2.5 years has helped us both to get to know ourselves better.
I completely agree. We learn so much through our children. And knowing ourselves better through our parenting journey is, I think, probably one of the biggest personal development experiences ever, becoming a parent and the journey of parenting. And I say that as, you know, someone whose kids are a bit older than yours, it's still such a learning process. But I would like to pick up something that you said there too, Shelley. Something around experimentation. There's a bit of an element of experimentation. Now, to be fair, I know your decision to homeschool was actually pretty well thought out. But I'm recalling that you and I have talked about this before, about how sometimes deciding to experiment with something can be a really good way to try something new without feeling that we are wedded to it forever.
Yeah, look, homeschooling often feels like a very big experiment. Hence the, like, you know, becoming the student of your child, you're like the scientist. but yes, I am a big proponent of experimentation, both in my life and in my business, because I think there is this pressure in trying to get to know yourself is trying to find like the completely correct answers. And the truth is, in life, there are no completely correct answers. But what you can do is you can try things, but try things with that intention of experimentation. So as business owners, I feel that one of the best ways we can learn more about ourselves and test the interests of our markets and our offers is to experiment with those offers, to just give things a go, but to do it in a very framed way, a very scientific way. And so in that way, you can go, is this a good offer for the market? I'm actually going to put it out there. I'm going to see if people will pay for this thing. And again, starting small, experimenting small. And I think we can do the same things with ourselves. Like one of the things that I want to pick up now is I want to go for piano lessons. So I'm trying to think of a way to, like, I do play the piano, but I want to advance my practice, maybe learn a little bit of jazz. And so I want to experiment with that. So I want to try and maybe do it, like, to say, okay, I'm going to commit to a term or a particular time period that I'm going to go for lessons, maybe have a little bit of a goal that I want out of it, but also just a curious mind to kind of give it a go and see how much I enjoy that. Again, I haven't been for piano lessons in like since I was in high school. So it would be really quite fun to discover that side of myself. So I think you can bring that into your business. You can try those kinds of offers. You give it a go for that designated period. You look at what is working, what is not working, and then you move forward with that information because you've got that information through that experimentation.
I love this. And, you know, I think many times, Shelley, I credit you for encouraging my experimentation or at least reigniting it. Because I know that when we worked together and you were helping me with copywriting and website work, the experimentation approach really worked for me. Because at the time I was a newer business owner and it felt way less overwhelming and made me realize it was actually okay to not know everything, which as an upholder was kind of a big insight. So a few years have passed since then and I am now a big fan of trying new things, both in my business and my personal life. I think becoming a parent had actually kind of squashed that for a little while for me because I used to try new things and do lots of exciting stuff all the time. But then I got kind of in the woods of being a parent with young kids. And so it was really valuable to then reconnect with experimenting and trying new things and rediscovering what I used to love and maybe I still love it, and also trying new stuff and discovering there are new things that I love. So I really think that experimenting or trying new things is a great way to learn more about yourself, what you like, and what makes you, well, you.
Yeah, it is. It's so illuminating. And I think bringing in that idea of play as well, you know, I love me some playful mompreneur stuff. So don't be too attached to the actual end outcome, but more attached to the journey, to finding out that curiosity and beginner's mind. I think it's just so wonderful. So now I've been super patient, but I can't wait any longer to talk about this other aspect of personality. It's the introversion versus extroversion, introverts and extroverts. I have been desperate to talk about this. I know these terms are used a lot in popular culture, but I know from you, from your psychology background, that there are terms that come from psychology, right?
Yep, absolutely right, Shelley. Introversion versus extroversion is one of the traits in the Big Five trait factor theory. So each factor has a scale, and the related tests place you either in the center or more one way or the other. So extroversion is the trait or trade, depending on which country you're from, whether you say trait or trade. And the characteristics of a low score on the extroversion scale is what we commonly refer to as introversion.
Okay. So it's like a spectrum or like a continuum. That makes sense. So you mentioned there was five factors. What are the other four?
I thought you'd probably ask me that. All right, this is going to test my memory of psychology. So the first one is agreeableness, which captures whether you're good-natured, helpful and trusting, or perhaps lean the opposite way. The other one is openness to experience, which looks at the ability to tolerate the unfamiliar, but it also includes at one end curiosity and creativity, so Shelley, things that are very much your kind of ballpark, but at the other end, the more down-to-earth conventional approach. And then we have conscientiousness, which captures those that are very dependable, very reliable and organized people, which kind of sounds like most upholders. And then at the opposite end of that are the people who are perhaps a little bit more unreliable or lackadaisical or careless. And then finally, we have neuroticism. So the language of the model describing the five factors is actually really dated now. But neuroticism basically covers the emotional responses and whether you are calm or more inclined to, say, worry and be nervous.
Okay. All right. That is good to know. A framework that comes from research-based psychology to go, all right, where do you sit on those scales? And I take it people could sort of just self-identify, right? And just go, okay, where do I fit? And knowing that can then help you in your day-to-day interactions.
Yeah. And the way to remember them is it smells out ocean. So if you think of it as the five factors, the letters are ocean. So openness to experience, conscientiousness, extroversion, introversion, agreeableness is the A, and then neuroticism is the N. So if you just think of the word ocean, that kind of prompts you to remember what are the factors.
Excellent. Cool. So just to dive into a little bit more on the introversion, extroversion stuff. So my understanding is that introversion and extroversion refer to how you get your energy, and this has been quite telling for me. So introverts restore their energy or get energy from activities that are more quiet, often undertaken solo or just like one-on-one, like with one other close person. So like reading, meditation, journaling. Maybe like a date night with your partner. But then extroverts get their energy from interacting with others, like lots of other people. So for example, they'll talk through their ideas with others and then they'll feel more energized and they'll love to be in a busy environment and meeting lots of people. There was one example from a friend of mine. You know, my introverted kids, I have to take them to like a play area or a party beforehand so that they can get there before other kids get there, so they can suss out the scene and just feel more comfortable before other people get there. Whereas a friend of mine was saying her daughter feels insecure when she gets to a party or school or whatever and there's not a lot of kids there. She feels secure when there are other kids and she feels safe when there are other kids, whereas my introverted kids feel the opposite. They're like, oh, this is so overwhelming.
That is an awesome example because I think as adults, we can apply that same logic to ourselves to get to know ourselves better. So if we are going into a meeting, for example, or attending a party or any other social function, we ask ourselves the same questions. When do I feel most comfortable? And then that can be a good indicator to know ourselves around whether we're more introverted or more extroverted. So I think that's an excellent example, Shelley. I would also add, though, there are a lot of misconceptions about introversion and extroversion. So listeners, if this is an area you want to learn more about, please ensure your sources are good. Knowing whether we're introvert or extrovert is huge for knowing ourselves better, just like knowing our tendency, because it can help us understand why we are the way we are and be okay with that. For example, I used to be more extroverted, but as I've gotten older, I'm moving more to the middle of the scale. So that is leaning more towards being a little bit more introverted. How about you, Shelley? I know you said you've got introverted kids. Where do you fall in this scale?
I'm definitely an introvert. Like, I totally identify as an introvert. So some of the Myers-Briggs tests, and we're going to get to that, put me as just like a 51% extrovert. So I feel like I'm very in the middle. And I think I come across to other people as very extroverted because I do love connecting with people. I love chatting about new ideas. But I do find after that I'm tired. I'm really tired. So that tells me I'm more introverted and I do need to have time by myself with my own thoughts. But yeah, I do love my people. So I just feel like we can't do this episode without referencing some of the more woo-woo stuff, a little bit of astrology. And you've talked to me about human design. So what are your thoughts on this, Ro?
Shelley, you know, I have to admit I kind of love it. Before I dive into it, because I could talk about this stuff for ages, I will say, though, I think it's useful for knowing yourself and it's brilliant from that perspective. I think where there is a risk is spending too much time knowing oneself and diving into all of these things and not ever actually using that information to adjust your behavior or change your actions accordingly. That said, I do love a lot of this woo-woo stuff, and I don't recommend using all of these all of the time, and they should always be taken with perhaps a grain of salt or maybe a pinch of salt. That said, I have had fantastic success with an astrology reading for my business, which really helped me lean into where I wanted to take my business. So for a couple of years I did that, and the years I did those and had those readings were some of my absolutely most successful. Recently, I also had a soul plan reading, which was incredibly illuminating and really helped me understand myself at a deeper level and think about what my life's purpose is and what I'm here to do, and maybe what do I want to continue to do with the rest of my life. So it was like some pretty big stuff around getting to know myself on a whole lot better way in a very deep level, which, to be honest, is kind of what we're talking about here today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think all of these things can help us to just get a bigger picture of what's going on in these beautiful minds of ours. You'll send me the astrology month-to-month things, and I love using that as a little bit of a guide. Of course, it's not a science, but it does help us to see ourselves like in the bigger picture of things. And human design, tell us a little bit about human design.
Well, human design is built on astrology plus Zen teachings and a bunch of other stuff too. And again, if you have the time and the interest, it can be really fun to explore your human design chart and what that means. There are lots of podcasts about it and fantastic resources on the websites. But be warned, it can be a bit of a rabbit hole. There is a lot of information there and it is genuinely fascinating.
Yeah, I did. I got my first reading and I was like, I'm going to stop right there. So all of these things, I think it all helps. So one of the other ones that people will always go to is the Myers-Briggs, what is it, a personality profile. But I know you have some opinions about Myers-Briggs.
I certainly do. I don't use Myers-Briggs in my coaching work as there's very little science behind it. And I actually prefer to use evidence-based tools that have been tested and proven, like the VIA Strength Survey. That said, it is a useful quiz if you're wanting to get just a little bit of a handle on yourself. Like you mentioned, it can be quite fun to do it and give you a little bit of an insight. But I would, again, encourage caution, as there really isn't any science behind it.
Okay, cool. I'm going to quickly ask you about Enneagram as well. Do you have any opinions on that?
Not particularly, no. I have looked at Enneagram and I felt it didn't resonate for me. It didn't have a lot of face validity, as in I couldn't see myself in the profile that it suggested for me, and so I kind of dismissed it. And that is something I want to mention on this. A lot of these tools, and I use the term in quotes, if it seems valid to you because it seems to marry up with what you already know about yourself, you're more likely to think it's a good tool. And similarly, if you look at it and say, well, that doesn't sound like me, you're more likely to dismiss it. And that's absolutely fine because it's just all about getting to know yourself better. I think that's why I do prefer going back to evidence-based ones like the VIA Strength Survey, because it doesn't always tell you what you already know. It actually can give you some new insights. But when you ask others, like we'd suggested with questioners, you'll often find out that that is actually a pretty accurate picture of who you are. So I do like that more scientific approach, really.
Okay, super interesting. I've always felt I just haven't found the right Enneagram test. I think I've done it twice and I also didn't like resonate with it, but I know some people love it. They're like, oh, I'm an Enneagram this. And I can never remember what my number was because I think they gave me three options. So I was like, I don't know. So yeah, this has been so fun to just talk about all the different ways that we've learned about ourselves, the way we've gotten to know ourselves. And I really encourage our listeners, take the time to get to know yourself. Choose some of the things that we've talked about here. We'll put all the links for any tools that we've mentioned in the show notes.
And look, just to echo what Shelley says, maybe even take yourself on a self-date where you go and learn about yourself. Ask yourself some questions. Learn about yourself. Put aside some time in your schedule or your diary or your calendar to say, right, for the next hour, that hour on Friday afternoon, I'm going on a date with myself and I'm going to get to know myself. Like Shelley mentioned before, like it's really good to know yourself because it helps you in your business, it helps you in your parenting, and it helps you in your life. Now, Shelley, please tell us, what are you reading at the moment?
I have picked up Adam Grant's Think Again. I was about halfway through before I put it on pause to read another book. We rebels do that, of course. And I'm really enjoying it. I'm really being challenged by it. And what's standing out for me so far is that we need to get comfortable with changing our minds, comfortable with changing our views, shaking up our thoughts. And if we can get this right, it's going to be a major strength. You know, often I think we felt that was a weakness when we changed our mind. We felt like we looked weak, but it's actually a strength. So how about you? What are you reading at the moment, Ro?
Well, I'm reading From Strength to Strength by Arthur C. Brooks. And it's about how, as we age, rather than continue to acquire more titles and roles, plus all the other stuff that comes with that, to be truly happy, once we get to midlife, we need to move on from that approach to one of looking at how we can share our knowledge, teach, and mentor others. So it's really, again, this idea about we need to change. There's a whole lot more in the book, but that's kind of where I'm up to at the moment. So we've shared a bunch of different tools today, which means it must be time for us to conclude the episode. So we hope that these tips have really helped you to know yourself better. And do let us know if you try any of them out or if you would like some support as you do so. So you can find us on Instagram. I'm Rowena Mabbott on Instagram. And Shelley, where can listeners find you?
I'm Shelley Smith Creative on Instagram. And go and comment on the little post for this particular podcast. Ask your questions. Tell us what you've been doing. What have you discovered about yourself? We'd love to know.
Exactly. It'll be great to continue the conversation in that way. But before we wrap up, there are two more things we need to do. The most exciting thing as we conclude this episode is announcing our next book. Shelley, would you like to do the honors?
Absolutely. So with a drum roll, please. The next book we will be reading and talking about on Two Booked Up is The Lazy Genius Way by Kendra Adachi.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to it. There have been a lot of great insights in The Lazy Genius Way for knowing ourselves better, but also for parenting and, dare I say it, running our own businesses too.
Yes, definitely. And talking of conversation, we'd love it if you tell your friends about Two Booked Up. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also contact us through our website, twobookedup.com. That's twobookedup.com. And that's where you can also find show notes from this episode.
Subscribe to the podcast on your podcast player. Or if it doesn't have a subscribe, click the button that says follow. That's the best way to get all our future episodes.
Okay, that's it for episode 4 of Two Booked Up. See you next time.